However, coming up right this second, we are joined by an NFL Network insider. As a reminder, the NFL Network has comprehensive live coverage of the 2024 NFL Draft in Detroit, Thursday through Saturday. Our guest can be seen on NFL 360's draft special tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. Of course, I'm talking about Tom Pelissero. Tom, great to have you back. How are you doing, Tom?
Doing great, Jim. Walking around downtown Detroit today, you can tell that the NFL is taking it over. It's not the old days of going to Radio City and doing it in the theater, man. They build this thing out. They take over the downtown space, and it should be buzzing here the next few days.
I was going to say, so how does it feel? Does it feel right?
Feels like it feels like another NFL takeover. You know, it's almost Super Bowl-like, where you got the fencing up and you got everything, you know, everybody's being rerouted downtown. I'm sure all the locals are annoyed that they can't just walk across the street anymore. But hey, man, this is a big deal. It's a traveling roadshow, and the NFL does a heck of a job putting it on.
That's it, and they've got the draft. It's in their town. So why don't we talk about that? It's a virtual lock, Tom, that the Bears take Caleb Williams first overall. I mean, the guy's skill set, his talent, they're undeniable. We know this. Have you heard any concerns at all around the league about how he might fit with the Bears in terms of the coaching staff or the talent he'll have around him? Is there anything else there?
I would say the biggest thing for other teams has just been about how unique the process is around Caleb Williams in terms of he doesn't have a traditional agent. He's got this team of attorneys and advisors. His dad, Carl, has been heavily involved and has had a vision for his son's career. You know, he pauses his pre-draft training and he takes a vacation to Tokyo with his girlfriend. He doesn't do the medical at the combine. He only takes one visit. These are all different things, but it's easy for other teams to say that they'd be nervous about it. It's a completely other thing to be holding the number one pick and have this guy who, before he ever set foot on a college football field, was a likely number one overall pick. The Bears are in this spot not because they were the worst team in the league, but this is a rare occasion where they hold it because of the deal they made last year with the Carolina Panthers. I had one coach tell me Caleb Williams is going to be stepping into a better situation than any quarterback in the past 5 years. And the Bears have really built this thing up with the idea all along that they were building it for Caleb Williams. This isn't like some past drafts where there's a real kind of back and forth and who are we going to take? They knew once they had the number one pick locked in, it was probably Caleb Williams. So what do? They change offensive coordinators. They bring in Shane Waldron, who's worked with a variety of different types of quarterbacks in Seattle and back in the Rams days. They think he's going to be a really good fit for Caleb. They signed DeAndre Swift. They trade for Keenan Allen. They retain their offensive line coach, Chris Morgan, who's one of the best run game guys in the league. They've already got a top 10 caliber defense with Matt Eberflus calling it for them. You know, this is a situation where it really is set up better than most teams that would be drafting number one. And from the Williams camp's perspective, you know, what they wanted from the Bears was a demonstration of investment and infrastructure. They wanted to make sure, and Caleb said this himself the other day, that he's in the best position possible to achieve his next goal, which is trying to win 8 Super Bowls, be the greatest of all time, and surpass Tom Brady. Now, that is a wild thing for anybody to say out loud or to show off, but you have to understand the psychology of Caleb and Carl and that group. You know, they set out from the time that Caleb was about 10 years old to make him the number one draft pick. They've accomplished that goal over 3 seasons at 2 different schools. He held serve. Now it's all about taking that next step forward. And if you would have gone back 6 months ago, 12 months ago, the Bears wouldn't have been at the top of the list of places that Caleb Williams wanted to go. But the Bears have done everything possible to demonstrate to Caleb Williams, you are in good hands here. We've got this. They sent him out to dinner with some of his future teammates back during his pro day visit. That all went really well. The coaches are still Zooming with him, staying in touch, just talking football, getting ready to launch this thing. They've had the advantage of knowing all along this was their guy. Everything the Bears have done, including trading Justin Fields for a 6th-round pick earlier than they needed to, that sent the signal we are all in on Caleb Williams. They could have picked up the phone and called him. That probably would have had the same effect. But they've shown again and again we are doing what it takes to put Caleb in the best spot possible. It is going to be a different type of situation just because Caleb is arguably the first true NIL quarterback coming in. He's a multimillionaire. He lived in a penthouse in L.A. Now he's moving to Chicago. And you know what, Jim? You know that market. You know the Bears as well as anybody. If Caleb Williams is as advertised, he will be the biggest stud in that city since probably Michael Jordan. That's the type of stakes that you've got out there right now for Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears?
Two things, Tom. Number one, that might be the most comprehensive response to a question I've ever gotten, and I mean that in the best way possible. And number two, you're right. I do understand the Bears. I understand that market. I mean, there's a lot of places where you want to be a star athlete, but I'm not sure there's a better place to be a star athlete than Chicago, and especially to be a star quarterback than Chicago. So if he is as advertised, that's going to be a great life. Tom Pelissero, my guest. What about the rest of Thursday? After the first pick, things can really get wild. What is the latest with the way in which the Commanders are leaning at number two, especially after they brought in multiple QBs all at the same time, and Jaden Daniels' camp apparently didn't like that very much? Where do they stand with that second pick? Who do they like best?
I've asked Jim some other general managers if they can ever remember a group visit for quarterbacks, because there are other teams that will try to do a lot of their 30 visits at once. And it's because of, you know, you observe dynamics, you get everybody in the building, and you kind of have like a team type of an environment. Nobody I've talked to remembers a team doing this with quarterbacks. And the big reason for that is because normally if you're evaluating quarterbacks, you want to maximize the amount of time that you have with them. If you're the GM or you're the head coach or the OC, you want to sit down for a couple hours and really get into it with these guys. When you bring in four of them at once, because Michael Penix was there as well as J.J. McCarthy and Drake May and Jaden Daniels, it's harder to do that. Now, I would point out only one guy got picked up at the airport by Dan Quinn, and that was Jaden Daniels. The other guys took a shuttle bus to the hotel. So if you want to read into the transportation here, you get a pretty good idea that Jaden Daniels was being treated slightly differently than the other guys. But this has been an open secret within the league just before the process started. Jaden Daniels has a relationship with Antonio Pierce going back to their days and him being recruited to Arizona State. Perfect world. He'd love to go and be a Raider. But Washington has sent the signal to everybody that's called on the number two pick, going all the way back to the combine, going back to free agent week, that they're not moving off of number two. Having said that, I don't know that I can sit here a little over 72 hours out from the draft and say definitively that Jaden Daniels is going to be the pick. You have a lot of voices involved in Washington. You got Josh Harris, who's a new owner. This is his first draft. He sat in on every meeting, every combine interview. He was a part of that group visit. You've got Bob Myers, the former Warriors general manager, who was at the combine, who has been a big part of the organization going back to when he helped run the coaching and GM search. You've got Magic Johnson's going to have an opinion on things. You got Dan Quinn. You've got Cliff Kingsbury. All of which is to say, you have to work through this entire deal because these are different styles of quarterbacks. Jaden Daniels, obviously, is a playmaker. I've had people tell me, scouts and coaches, he might be the most talented passer in the draft, even more so than Caleb Williams. It's just, yeah, he's undersized, and you know, you worry about the violent Looney Tunes-type hits that he takes out there on a weekly basis. Drake May is going to need more time. He's a different style of quarterback, but there absolutely is some love for him in the building. And I know for a fact, you know, the Commanders and other teams who went to J.J. McCarthy's pro day walked out of there going, that guy showed us more horsepower than we knew that he had. So if I had to guess right now, Jim, I would say Jaden Daniels at number two, but I would not say that that's 100% at this stage, which is when all the drama now comes from, because until the Patriots at three know for sure what's happening at number two, they're not moving. So any trade at three might occur on the clock.
Tom Pelissero joining us. I was going to ask you about the Pats at three. It seems like every single year, Tom, there's always that marquee quarterback who gets picked apart. This year, it's May. I spoke to North Carolina head coach Mack Brown last week. He called him, as you might expect, he called him one of the best players and best people he's ever coached. So I'm curious, where do you come out on all the criticism of May? And if Daniels does, in fact, go second, are the Pats locked in on May with number three?
There's a couple of different things with Drake May. One is just, you know, the accuracy that comes up from the coaches a lot when I talk to people. Just, you know, one of them said to me, he's not naturally accurate, so it's going to be a project. Now, there's a lot to work with in terms of the tools, the arm, the size, you know, good athletic ability, maybe not quite Justin Herbert, but he can move around pretty well for a big guy. He's likable. He is young, though. You know, there's always kind of some maturity in general that takes place when you're 20, 21 years old. And coming from that offense, like other North Carolina quarterbacks in the past, it's just such a gigantic leap because it's so simplistic the way that they run things. Now, with Drake May, he comes from an athletic family. You know, his dad played there. His brother won a basketball national title. His other brother won a baseball national title at the University of Florida. He's always been the young kid in the family who's, you know, losing 50 straight ping pong games or whatever it is and then going, okay, rack them up. Let's go one more time. I'm going to win this next one. So it's not like there's concern about he's going to be bad initially and it's going to ruin him. It's more so, ideally, you just don't want to force somebody out there before they're ready. He's got a lot to learn. There's every reason to think that he's got the aptitude and he can pick it up. You just want to give him a little bit of time. So we all know in the NFL right now, you generally don't have the benefit of time. People within the league I've spoken to think New England would be a really good fit for him because you have Jacoby Brissett there, because there's not as much pressure for him to play right away. And that it would also be a fit for the Patriots in that division, getting a big, strong guy for when you're playing in the elements and you're playing in cold weather. That might be something that's alluring to them as well. But you have the Giants at 6, you have the Vikings at 11. Depending, again, how those first two picks fall, you could have competition for a couple other teams to trade up to number 3. To this point, the Patriots haven't got an offer that's compelled them to move. And again, I would think, no matter what, things can change, but I would not anticipate that they're going to move off that pick, if they move off that pick, until they're on the clock Thursday night.
Tom Pelissero joining us. All right, Tom, before you go, in addition to your draft responsibilities later on in the week on NFL Network, you are contributing to NFL 360's draft special tomorrow night. It's 8 p.m. Eastern. You're profiling Tulane quarterback Michael Pratt. What can you tell us about his personal journey on his path to the draft?
Well, thanks for asking, Jim. And Michael Pratt is a fascinating story. He has dealt with incomprehensible heartbreak through the course of his life. You know, when he was in high school as a senior, his best friend on the team, Bryce Gowdy, who was a top recruit, he was headed to Georgia Tech the week before. The both of them were supposed to early enroll and leave town. Bryce Gowdy died by suicide. And that was something that weighed heavily on Michael Pratt. He has a tattoo on his arm that says Believe in 7, which was Gowdy's number. He switched his uniform number to number 7. One of his biggest fans was his brother, David, who, if you ever watched the Tulane game when they had that magical season in 2022 and were one of the last unbeaten teams, you know, Pratt after games would run over and jump into this big guy's arms in the front row of the stands. And that was his brother, Michael, who was his biggest fan. Last summer, Michael became a father for the first time, and a couple of weeks later, his brother passed away. David passed away. And so Michael Pratt is somebody who has carried a lot of grief with him. He's also known as one of the exceptional leaders, a guy who, you know, really has this way of bringing people together. He helped bring that Tulane program to places that it had not previously been. When I talk to coaches and scouts about Michael Pratt, there's questions about the player. He's probably a late day 2, early day 3 guy. Maybe he's a long-term backup with upside. But as a person, people absolutely rave about him as a guy. So he gave us really cool access. The NFL 360 people, there's a reason that they lead the country in sports Emmy nominations every year. Their visual storytelling is second to none. And so I got to spend a couple of days with Michael Pratt down in Florida, and I'm really proud of how it came out, and look forward to everybody getting to see it tomorrow.
Tremendous. I'll look forward to that too. Tom Pelissero, an NFL Network insider. And again, the NFL Network has comprehensive live coverage of the 2024 NFL Draft in the D Thursday through Saturday. Tom, I know it's a busy week. Great to have you on the show. As always, thanks so much, Tom. Have a great week.
You're the best, Jim. Thanks, man.
You too, dude. Much respect. Tom Pelissero.